Hello and welcome to Goodness Level Live. Today we're going to be talking to Dr. Peter Bongiorno all about how to manage anxiety during this pandemic.
Dr. Peter Bongiorno is an incredible naturopathic doctor that we had the fortunate opportunity of interviewing him for our series last July, and he is incredible. And as soon as we interviewed him, we knew we had to get him on the show for you guys. So sit back, enjoy, and prepare to learn a lot about anxiety. Hey everyone, we are so excited that you've joined us here today. We have a special guest, Dr. Peter Bongiorno. He's an incredible naturopathic doctor from New York City. So Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for all the great work you're doing and spreading good energy and good information. I'm excited to be here. And everybody, welcome to New York, where the coronavirus is definitely an epidemic and unfortunately is at its probable peak right now, maybe just starting to go past peak. We are plateauing. And certainly it's a time of great fear and great anxiety, especially here in New York. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
Well, thanks for sharing. It's interesting to actually get word from someone actually in New York. I'm glad to hear that, you know, it's becoming more manageable, but obviously still a terrible situation. But what we really want to talk to you about today, obviously for people with anxiety, this pandemic has been a really trying time. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously
yeah, of course.
People that already had it and now we're dealing with a worldwide crisis. How has that been for you? I know you, Dr. Bongiorno, have really thrown yourself into mental health research for many years, and that's why we're so excited to have you here today. We love your work and you're so experienced. Yep. And would you like to walk us through, you know, how do you manage anxiety during a time like this? Is it possible? What can people do? What are some practical things that people can do?
You know, it's interesting because the last time we went through something in this area similar to this, certainly not at this level by any means, was in 2008. And in 2008, there was that economic downturn and a lot of people lost their jobs. And for instance, men started having suicide rates at much higher rates than even the year before, right? By 2009, I think it was men's suicide rates are up like 7, 8, 9%. And it does seem like economic downturns alone can create that situation where men feel very uncomfortable, where men feel like they can't provide, and that creates a lot of depression in men. So imagine magnifying that by like 1,000 times with everything going on, people worried about the virus, people worried about their health, people worrying about their loved ones, especially elderly, plus an economic downturn on that. That's not just affecting certain business sectors, but pretty much affecting everybody. So unfortunately, I do foresee a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression coming out of this, a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder. I mean, we have, you know, at least here in the U.S., in the population, 18% of people have anxiety, you know, and probably about 8-9% of people have some form of depression. So, and that was before this all started. So imagine how this is going to affect the people who already have those things, and then bring in so much more to people who didn't really have them around the fence. So this is profound, and I think from a psychiatric standpoint, it's going to affect us for many, many years to come, and I think we have to be ready for it. So as far as COVID-19, I recommend a few things. Not to watch too much news. So if you notice, if you look at the news, they put a lot of red in the news, right? And it's to instill fear, you know, because they want you to keep watching. And when you get a fear response, it shoots up adrenaline, right? And adrenaline puts out sugar, and it almost becomes like a drug. You sort of get it addicted to. And you probably know there are some people who get addicted to adrenaline. Well, we all can get addicted to adrenaline. And if you're used to watching the news in the morning and in the afternoon and in the evening, and oh, what's going on? Is it getting closer to me? What's happening? We start to get addicted to that. And we need more and we need more. So all of these news feeds are feeding that. Look at them. They're all red, right? If you turn on the TV, you're going to see tons of red because red instills fear. I actually have a patient who told me she's, you know, in marketing. She's an expert in marketing. And she said that's on purpose because they're trying to addict you to this and they want you to keep watching. You know, you notice there aren't any calm blues back there, or there aren't any calm greens. It's red, 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 and it's like blood red, like there's blood in the streets red, you know? It's you know, there's calmer ways to bring information. You know, I would say listen to the radio. It may be a little bit better, although even on the radio, they'll have very like antagonistic sound, you know, something like that. So it's not always better at the radio. But so I think the best thing is to just watch what you have to so you know what's going on, but don't watch more than you have to. So proper sleep is super important. If I had to pick one thing to support the immune system, to lower inflammation in the body and to make sure that your immunity, your innate immunity, which is the only part of the immunity we have to fight the virus, is strong, have to get enough sleep. In fact, you know, it's interesting because it seems like this virus affects children the least. And one of the things about kids is that they have about 10 times the amount of melatonin that adults have. And we believe that it might be one of the reasons why they have a stronger innate immune system that can fight the virus. And you notice children barely even get sick, right? And because melatonin itself is a very powerful antioxidant. And if you're not going to bed, you know, around 10, 11, 11:30, the latest, you miss your melatonin secretion that comes out, that circadian secretion that comes out in the early evening, and you won't get the benefits of that melatonin for that purpose. So getting to bed early, getting a good quality sleep, at least 7-8 hours is vitally important right now. And it'll calm your body because good sleep has been shown to really lower anxiety and fear response. Right, because if you're sleeping well, then you're probably not running for your life. So that's good.
So interesting about the melatonin. What time does melatonin normally get released in the evening?
Yeah. So, well, interestingly, you know, there's different studies, but in general, peak melatonin seems to be around 8:30, 9 o'clock, maybe 9:30, the latest. So we're all probably missing a little bit. I mean, think about it, right? When do animals go to bed in the wild?
Yeah,
they go to bed when the sun goes down, right? How late is that? I mean, it depends on the time of year, but it's usually not past 8:30, 9 o'clock, even in the summer, at least here in the States. I guess depending on your latitude, it's going to be a little different. So, so it's something that, you know, where most of us are missing.
Wow, that's early. Cool. Thank you. I'll let you keep going.
Yeah, of course. No, please ask questions. And you know, and I have this slide because it's also important that we get out into nature. This is a slide that they looked at almost 1 million children born in Denmark between 85 and 2003. And then they looked at where these kids were living and how much green space was around them. And what they found was that the lowest levels of green space had up to a 55% increased risk of any psychiatric disorder. So think about that. So the more green space they had, the less mental health issues they had.
Oh.
You know, I practice in New York City, and I see a lot of stressed out kids. No question about it. And, you know, and it's, you know, parents who are in the city for different reasons, and they're not trying to hurt their children. Of course, they love their children. But just the fact of having kids in an environment that there's a lot of concrete, not a lot of green space, is not healthy for the brain. Because, again, we're animals. Animals do well in natural environments. And there's even studies about, you know, people who get surgery, if there's a window that overlooks nature, they tend to have better recovery and less pain. Or even if they have pictures of plants on the wall, they tend to have better recovery and less pain. So it's very clear that our eyes are looking for those natural images and shapes and greens and things as a way to feel calmer.
Great.
That's awesome. I think I even saw a study recently that was indicating like enhanced cognitive benefits for people. Like your brain actually works better once you go and out in nature.
Or just even flip through a magazine of nice pictures of nature.
No, absolutely. Yeah, it is very interesting. In fact, that same study also showed that they had another rooms with no pictures on the wall, and they had another room with modern art, with these very kind of modern art shapes. And what they found is the people who had no pictures were less stressed than the people who had like very austere kind of modern. And I like modern art, but now I'm starting to wonder, I'm like, maybe is that the best thing for me? Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah, it's really fascinating stuff. I think I have that one in my books actually. And this slide just basically says, you know, when you have children in the house, you have to look for different behaviors to check in on anxiety and depression in kids. Sometimes you see it more on their body, like tics and rashes, digestive symptoms, sudden mood changes, mood swings that are greater than 2 weeks in teenagers, changes in sleep or eating. So, you know, sometimes kids aren't going to come out and say they're anxious and depressed. You know, they're not going to be able to vocalize it that way, especially if the younger ones. Sometimes it's, you can just sit and ask your child and say, hey, you know, I know this is a weird time right now. How does your friend Tiffany feel about it? You know, does she talk to you about it? You know, as a way to sort of bring out what your child is thinking about it. Sometimes if they vocalize it through someone else's experience, it's an easier way for them to say how they feel. So it's just important to check in with the kids, because sometimes we think, oh, yeah, they're handling it. They're all okay. But they internalize, you know, they're very smart and they take it all in. And I think it's important as adults that we kind of temper our anxious responses when we can, because, you know, they pick it up. Okay. And then exercise, of course, you know, again, getting into green space. You know, if I'm going to run, I try to run outside, not on a treadmill, because I think the benefits are just far greater, you know, for the reasons you gave before. But any kind of movement is really important. If you haven't done any exercise, getting out for a walk, you know, I have parents in their 80s that are sheltering in Florida right now. And I check in with my mom and dad every day. And one of the things I ask them is, you guys are going outside, right? You're walking every day. You got to move your body. They have to exercise, especially as we get older. Because if you want the immune system to come down a few notches, just sit there. Don't move your body. You know, so now's the time to do it. Plus, exercise is really going to burn those stress hormones, burn the extra adrenaline, balance blood sugar, and keep us so much calmer. Exercise itself is probably the most powerful anti-anxiety drug we have. And you live longer, right? There's a study out of the University of Copenhagen that shows people who run at a mild to moderate pace 3 times a week. So it's not fast and it's not far. Men live 6.2 years longer. Women live 5.6 years longer than those who don't. So can you imagine a drug that I could sell you, that I could tell you, this is proven to help you live 5 to 6 years longer, right? Would you buy that drug? I would buy that drug, right? Yeah. If it had no side effects. Interestingly, in that study, it also showed that people who did moderate to extensive exercise, so they actually didn't live as long. So there's a gentle balance. It's not about doing more. It's about just doing what's right for your body and listening to your body. So actually longevity decreased the more they did. So, and it doesn't have to be exercise. It could be dancing, you know, music. There's other studies on music and how beneficial singing is and how beneficial performing is. I know you guys know all about that too. So this study, 2019, 130 people doing Greek traditional dance, right? That's that... Opa dance. Yeah. And what they found is dancing boosts dopamine, oxytocin, which is the hormone. Oxytocin goes up when you give somebody a hug and you get a hug. Oxytocin goes up when you're cooking a meal and you're smelling a meal and you feel like you're in a safe, comfortable place and with a loved one, right? Serotonin goes up too, which is another calming neurotransmitter. And endorphins, which are those feel-good hormones, right? So really, it doesn't have to be exercise. It could be something like dancing, any kind of movement. Yoga lowers cortisol, and of course, social interaction with those can help too. You know, in the time of social distancing, right? There are foods that are proven to reduce anxiety, zinc-rich foods, and that's interesting to me because zinc is probably one of the number one things you want to have on board in your body if you get sick. Right. So there's studies that are showing that when your zinc levels are low, it's much harder to fight viruses, coronaviruses, flu viruses, rotaviruses, all of these things. So zinc rich foods can be helpful. My favorite zinc rich food is probably pumpkin seeds. So We have a couple of bags of organic pumpkin seeds, and I eat a handful every day, and I take a little zinc as well. Fatty fish, also proven to reduce anxiety. And of course, fatty fish is great for the brain, right? And it's good for the immune system. In people who have the COVID-19 virus and end up in the hospital, the most likely reason they die is because when they're in the ICU, there's a lot of inflammation. It's called a cytokine storm, and they go into respiratory distress. Well, fatty fish and keeping good omega fats in your body is a good way to balance your immune system so that it doesn't get too inflamed. Asparagus has a component called sarsaparilla, and it actually has natural GABA. And GABA stands for gamma-aminobutyric acid, which is the calming neurotransmitter in your brain. And it's been shown, at least in my studies, that you can lower cortisol and help the animals be less stressed when you give them some asparagus. So, and it makes your pee smell funny. That's kind of fun too. Not everybody though. That's a genetic thing, but most of us, right? She's like, yeah. So antioxidant rich foods too. So there's this one study that shows that people have general anxiety disorder typically have much lower levels of vitamin A, vitamin C, and vitamin E versus people who don't have general anxiety disorder. So, and vitamin A itself is very important for the respiratory tract to protect against viruses. In fact, I remember learning in school 20 years ago that if someone is very virus prone or they have a virus, give them vitamin A. And it'll help lower their viral. And that's something I've been doing for ever since. You know, for 20 years, I've been giving people vitamin A for viruses. Children, give them small doses. The only time you want to be careful with vitamin A is for pregnancy, because you don't want to overdo vitamin A in pregnancy. And you don't want to do mega high doses for months and months, because it's not good for the brain. But that's mega doses. You know, reasonable doses like 10,000 IUs, unless you're pregnant, 10,000 IUs a day is perfectly safe. And take it with food for best absorption. And then foods with B vitamins. B vitamins get very depleted when we're very stressed out. And you need B vitamins for a whole number of reasons in the body to keep it healthy. Certainly to have good blood cells, certainly to have a good immune system, a good adrenal function. So good foods with B vitamins. And which foods have B vitamins in them, like folate? Green vegetables, right? In fact, folic acid, folia, is a Latin word for leaf, right? So things that are generally leafy are going to have good amounts of B vitamins and folate. And they did studies with depression in foods because, you know, people who are very anxious, when you're anxious in the short period of time, you stay anxious, right? You get anxious about this, you get anxious about that. Sometimes when people are anxious over a long period of time, little by little, their body starts to tire out and they start to get depressed, you know, because you get to the point where it's overwhelming and you don't feel like you can handle it anymore. And there are some depression foods based on a few studies. And this one particular study from the World Journal of Psychiatry looked at a number of different studies and identified 12 antidepressant nutrients. So they found when people had enough folate, iron, which of course carries oxygen, long chain omega fats, we mentioned before, magnesium, potassium, selenium. Selenium actually is very important because selenium, from a virus standpoint, has been shown that when people are deficient in selenium, which is a potent antioxidant, they're much more likely to go on to advanced respiratory distress syndrome, which is what basically kills people who have the coronavirus. So selenium is really important. The other one that does that is vitamin D. So back to this list, selenium, thiamine, vitamin A again. So you're going to hear a lot of the same things, right? B6, B12, vitamin C, and zinc. Here in Long Island, actually, they took the cue from China, and they've been doing a lot of IV vitamin C, intravenous vitamin C, in patients who are very sick, and they're getting very good results, actually. So it's not 100% cure, but it seems to be working well. And vitamin C is probably one of the most potent antioxidants we have. So what were the highest scoring foods? Oysters and mussels, organ meats, and plant-based foods. Again, the leafy greens, like I mentioned earlier, lettuce, peppers, cruciferous vegetables. So, you know, the you can't go wrong if you're eating foods that you know are healthy. It's really hard to make a mistake with vegetables. And yes, people have certain food sensitivities, but sticking to healthy foods in general is brilliant for anxiety and depression. And, you know, there are a number of Mediterranean studies on the Mediterranean diet that started with Sanchez and Villegas probably in the early 2000s. And you know, what they showed is when people eat healthy whole foods, a good Mediterranean diet, they have much, much less anxiety and much, much less depression. And if they already have those conditions and start eating that way, it decreases significantly.
Hmm. Wow. Thank you, Dr. Buongiorno. I'm loving this. Yeah. And what I'm finding really cool is that, like, all your suggestions are like double whammies. It's not just like, yes, it's going to help people with their anxiety, but just as much is going to help people protect their bodies and boost their immune system, all of those things to help protect them during this time. So brilliant advice. Thank you so much.
Oh, yes. My pleasure. So this is a plate. So this is a typical plate that I would have seen maybe at Christmas time and during the holidays and Easter before we actually have a meal, right? Usually there's a lot of cheese involved and there's all these processed meats, you know, salami and pepperoni and prosciutto and all this stuff. And I just thought it was interesting because the association with mood and foods. So this says nitrated meats products are associated with mania in humans and altered behavior and brain gene expression in rats. So what we're seeing is that these kind of foods are problematic. So as much as the good foods are very, very healthy, we also know that foods that aren't so good for you really do promote anxiety, depression, mania, schizophrenia, things like that. And honestly, it's probably one of the reasons. Oh, wait, one second. There we go. It's probably one of the reasons, like, I can explain my Italian family and why they act the way they do. That was a joke, a little slow in there. All right. So what about probiotics versus foods? You know, because a lot of people really support the use of supplements, and I think there's a lot of benefits to supplements. But they have this one study here, which came out of China in 2019, and they were really asking the question, well, which works better, giving people foods that are healthy, or is it better to give them probiotics or both or what? So for anxiety symptoms. So it was a Shanghai meta-analysis. They looked at 20. So a meta-analysis means that it's a study that looks at a whole bunch of different studies, right? So they look at all the literature and they try to find the best studies. And then they kind of compare them and decide, okay, as a whole, what do these studies say? So a meta-analysis, in my opinion, is more powerful than just one single study because it's looking at a whole bunch of them. So this looked at 21 studies, about 1,500 people. And what they found was giving people probiotics and giving people healthy foods, both were of benefit to regulate mood. But what they found is that 80% of the studies that had food interventions, things like, and that's what it says on the right here, the low FODMAP diet, giving people resistant starches, giving people something called FOSs, which stands for fructooligosaccharides, which are basically these kind of fibers that come with healthy foods that help your intestines keep good germs in them. They found that 80% of those dietary interventions showed benefit, and about 30% of the studies that just used probiotics were effective. So there were no adverse effects for either, and both had a reasonable effect, but certainly the dietary effect had much greater effects. So I think food wins overall. And, you know, for my patients, I give them both because why not? Why not do everything we can at one time? So we mentioned oxytocin before, right? Because eating the right foods can increase oxytocin. This is my dog, Elon, who I mentioned earlier. He's 2 years old now. And I go running with Elon every other morning. We take a nice 3 to 5 mile run, depending on how much time I have or how much time he has. He's busy too. And what's been shown is that when you interact with your animal, it increases oxytocin and decreases cortisol. In the human, what they showed was in the animal, it increases oxytocin. It increases oxytocin, which is that calming neurotransmitter that helps your brain make other calming neurotransmitters. But it actually increases cortisol a little bit. And they're not exactly sure why. So I don't know if it's because we stress the dog out a little or because they're so excited that they're just, that their cortisol goes up too. Either way, when they looked at the studies, it doesn't seem to harm the animal when we interact with them. They seem to like it. So that's a good sign. So those of you who love animals, the animals are very powerful in terms of our own health and lowering anxiety. And I have a number of patients who have the coronavirus who are stuck in very small apartments in New York City. And luckily, they have animals with them. And the animals can really help very, very much. What are supplements that we can use? So we talked about lifestyle, and we talked about diet, and we talked about dogs and all these things that can calm us. What about the supplements? Well, I like basic supplementation. You know, people should be taking omegas. People should be taking probiotics for the reasons we mentioned earlier. And also a good multiple vitamin. Multiple vitamins have been shown on their own to help lower anxiety and depression. And actually, there's an interesting study in HIV showing that people who take a multiple vitamin who have immunodeficiency from HIV can also get less viruses if they have a good complement multiple vitamin on board. And then I recommend general viral support for the reasons I mentioned earlier. Zinc supports the immune system. Vitamin A supports the epithelial lining. Vitamin C is an antioxidant. Vitamin D and selenium, which when deficient can create more likelihood of advanced respiratory distress. And nettles, I should have written nettles root. Nettle root also has studies in other types of coronaviruses showing that when nettles is present, some of the molecules in nettles, that it's much less likely that the virus will attach. Green tea also, yeah, and if you look at that paper I mentioned earlier, I have the research on that as well. So green tea is also very good for mood. It's very good for people who kind of have low mood. It actually raises dopamine. You know, we give people Wellbutrin and all these drugs to try to raise dopamine, but green tea does a pretty good job. And there's another herb called macuna, which is an Ayurvedic herb, which can do the same. And then if people start getting sick, I do recommend stronger immune supports. Ginger, in any form you can get it, as a tea, as a supplement. Topical lozenges. When people get the upper respiratory symptoms, which is a typical first symptom, coating your upper respiratory, like your throat area, with zinc can help stop the virus from kind of moving further down, which is exactly what you want to do. You don't want to let it get into the lower respiratory tract. And then herbal remedies, elderberry has been shown effective against other coronaviruses. Of course, you know, we don't have studies with this one because it's so new. Andrographis is another Chinese herb, which is also has alkaloids and things that can really also help the lower respiratory tract and protect it. And then there's a Coptis formula. It's formula to reduce heat toxicity is the translation from the Chinese. And that's also another formula. And it has things like Scutellaria bicalensis in it, which also has been shown to have good antiviral activity against other coronaviruses. And in the patients that I've seen who started having lower respiratory conditions and situations, I found that the Andrographis and that Coptis formula has worked well. Also high dose vitamin C, N-acetylcysteine, and glutathione, which is a very potent antioxidant.
On the vitamin C, there's a lot of different forms I've seen out there. Do you mm-hmm. recommend any certain form? And what do you mean when you say high dose? So for anyone at home, what are they looking at?
Yeah, that's a good question. So for people who just want to prevent, I usually recommend around 1,000 milligrams of like 500 milligrams twice a day. It's really been shown that if you take more than 500 milligrams at one time, if you're not that sick, it doesn't really seem to absorb all that much more into the body and you end up kind of peeing it out. But if you're sick, your body's going to be using a lot more vitamin C at a much higher level. So I recommend, it depends on the person, but 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams, like three times a day. So maybe 6,000 milligrams, 10,000 milligrams, maybe. There is one form of vitamin C I use called the ribosylated C, which people can use as a powder, drink it, and they can actually get much higher doses and get like 5, 10,000, 15,000 in. So, you know, when you're doing IV therapy, you're using very high dose vitamin C that goes directly into the bloodstream. If you're at home, most people don't have that option, but you can use these special ribosylated Cs to get even higher doses. And the good thing is with these special vitamin Cs, they don't seem to cause the loose stools. So I would tell people, I kind of warn them when you're doing higher doses of vitamin C, if you're starting to see loose stools from it, then you should back off because it's not going to give you any more benefit. It's just going to give you loose stools. One of the complicating issues that I'm seeing with coronavirus is that a lot of people are getting loose stools from the virus itself. So it's a little hard to tell what is the coronavirus and what is the vitamin C. So in that case, I'm having them take the higher doses anyway.
Great. Thank you.
Hope that wasn't too confusing.
No, that was perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. And then I do recommend for anxiety and depression some basic mood supports. I actually formulated this a few years ago. And the idea of this was to kind of help balance a few different systems in the body. Chromium has been shown not only to help anxiety, but to balance blood sugar. Rhodiola is very good for both anxiety and depression, and it balances the stress system. This axis called the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, which is a system in the body that helps regulate stress hormones. Saffron, which has also been shown to be very useful for anxiety and depression. Berberines, which is also good for balancing neurotransmitters. And then curcumin, which is known as a very potent anti-inflammatory and also very useful for the inflamed brain. And when the brain is inflamed, you can also get anxiety and depression. So each of these components individually has been shown to be beneficial for both anxiety and depression. So my thought was, well, support all those different systems of physiology, the gut, the brain, the stress system, the blood sugar system, all at one time. And that's something that I kind of use as a basic for most of my patients. And then there are some herbal therapies that I like to use for just quick relief. You know, because when people come in, they're feeling very anxious. And most of us are used to the conventional medical system that says, hey, you know, you don't feel good, take this, you'll feel better. And sometimes in naturopathic medicine, it takes a little longer. But I find with these, we can get people feeling a little bit better faster while we're working on the underlying issue. So I like using passion flower, chamomile, which isn't spelled right, tilia, and valerian. Valerian is well known for sleep, but I also give it to people during the day. Tilia, also known as linden, is very good for people when they have like a lot of arrhythmias and their heart feels like it's kind of beating out of sync, and that happens to them when they get anxious, which is something that used to happen to me. And so even to this day, if I feel a little anxious, I'll take tilia and linden because it's very calming for the heart. And then magnesium, also spelled wrong, goodness. So magnesium glycinate, also very good. For anxiety, the glycinate version is very useful because it helps the brain make more GABA and binds to GABA receptors. Magnesium threonate, which is spelled right, is also a very good form of magnesium because it gets to the brain very quickly and has a much more calming effect than other forms of magnesium. And then GABA itself, which I think has a good mild to moderate effect. Glycine itself, which you can get as amino acid and take in teaspoon. In fact, sometimes I'll take glycine and I'll mix it with passion flower because I find both of them together can really work. Sorry. And then lithium orotate. Lithium is a calming mineral, which also supports GABA production and GABA receptors in the brain. Many years ago, they noticed that people in different parts of the world where lithium levels were high in the water had much lower anxiety, much less depression, and virtually no suicide rates. And it's because lithium is very supportive of the brain to calm it. And then if people aren't sleeping, I find probably one of the best things for anxiety is just to get people sleeping better. And besides doing lifestyle and other changes about the room and stress, I also like giving them things like the amino acid tryptophan. Melatonin is very useful. And a Japanese herb called magnolia, which has a component called honokiol in it, which is very good at lowering cortisol, which can shoot up at night and keep us awake. Okay, and then this is a thyme. This is actually out of my garden from last year. And sometimes what I'll have parents do for very stressed out kids is I'll have them take thyme, which is, you know, just a nice herb, and shove it in a bottle as much as you can get in there, and then pour some olive oil in it and let it sit for about a month. And then you can pour out a teaspoon and you can take it every day. And that's going to have a few micrograms of lithium in it, because thyme is probably the herb or the plant with the most lithium naturally occurring in it. So you can make your own little lithium oil using thyme and olive oil.
Great tip. My mom is going to love that.
Oh, yeah?
She's well
yeah, it's good.
Stuff.
It's delicious. And actually, thyme is one of the things when people are starting to get the symptoms, the breathing symptoms from COVID, and they're getting the coughing and the kind of the tight chest, I'll usually have them do a steam pot, right? And then they put a towel over their head. So you boil water in a pot, and then you take it off the flame, you let it cool the hair, and while it's still steaming, you can throw thyme in there, you can throw a little bit of garlic, you can throw eucalyptus in there, and then you put your head over it with a towel, and you breathe the humidified air like a few times a day. And I find that's one of the best things to help people's breathing feel better. So very old remedy, very effective. And then the last one I like is CBD. You know, and I know there's a lot of hype about CBD, but there's hype because it does work. It's anti-inflammatory. It's a good anti-anxiety. It's sleep promoting. It's very relaxing. And it's been shown to help a positive mood and lower the fear response. So really in that active fear response, CBD is a very good choice as well. And what's been shown is that it increases a natural molecule in our body called anandamide, which translates from the Sanskrit. It means bliss. And anandamide binds to CBD receptors, cannabidiol receptors, which have those effects. So it's really a beautiful herb. And I do recommend, you know, people get it. This is the one we use. There's many good out there, but there's also a lot of junky ones out there. So just make sure you do your homework and find ones that work well. And okay, so in summary, we talked about a lot of stuff, right? Like how do we deal with anxiety during the coronavirus? Sleep, exercise, meditation, psychotherapy, the right foods, connect with loved ones, the positive thoughts, the right supplements, and have the right schedule. And you certainly don't have to take all these supplements, but when you have specific issues going on, you know, hopefully this will help you know which ones to go to.
Fantastic. Wanted to ask about, you know, CBD. I think for a lot of people, well, you know, it's still illegal here in Australia. For a lot of people are maybe nervous because it has been illegal or is illegal. What would you say to someone that is like, oh, isn't that marijuana? Like, why is this okay for me? And could you speak to that?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So there's cannabis has two basic types of plants. One is the marijuana plant and one is the hemp plant. And they're very, very similar and they actually look very similar. The marijuana plant has two main components you could think of. One is CBD, right? And one is THC. The THC has the psychoactive component. And so that's the one that, you know, when people smoke it or take it, that's what makes them feel high, right? The CBD makes them feel calmer, but not high. Hemp has only the CBD with trace amount of THC, but not enough to create a psychoactive effect. So for many, many years, because governments couldn't distinguish between the two, they just made sure it was all illegal. Now in certain countries like the United States, I think it was about 2 years ago, they signed this bill called the Farm Bill, where they allowed people to start producing things from hemp because they realized hemp is such a brilliant plant. It's so strong. In fact, hemp in the United States during the time of the revolution, hemp basically helped, you know, helped the United States become a country because it was so strong. It was used for rope. It was cheap. You could grow it very easily, so that it was used for a lot of things. And really, it was used only up until the point when nylon came out. And then they stopped kind of using hemp because they were producing nylon even cheaper than you can make hemp, than you could grow hemp. So so hemp kind of stopped being used, but we had this beautiful component called CBD, which is also misunderstood and stopped being used. But the truth is, CBD has no effective psychoactive component. In fact, there's even studies in children giving very, very high doses of CBD for epileptic seizures and finding no side effects, certainly no psychoactive effects. Marijuana, on the other hand, for children is not a good idea. In fact, up until the age of 26, the brain is still developing. So marijuana itself used regularly is not really a good idea for anyone, and you know, until they're a bit older, like 26, 27, 28, in my opinion. So that's one of the reasons I think they should be careful with legalizing marijuana, because I don't really want 18-year-olds smoking marijuana. I just think they're still a little bit too young from a neurological standpoint.
Just a quick question around CBD and sleep, because I'm someone that can wake up at like 3-4 o'clock in the morning and then like heart's pounding. I haven't had a dream. But I found that if I take hemp oil before I go to sleep, that it's a much better sleep. Is there any science to support that, or is it a placebo effect?
No. I mean, what happens is that when you take the CBD, you're increasing the anandamide, and anandamide binds to those cannabinoid receptors here. The ones, we'll go back a little bit. Yeah. So you have this anandamide, right? So what happens is CBD doesn't directly bind. So CBD stands for cannabidiol, right? And it doesn't actually bind to the receptor itself. What it does is it stops one of the enzymes naturally in your body that break down anandamide. When you're very stressed out, you naturally break down anandamide because your body doesn't want you to sleep. It wants you to wake up early because, you know, there might be something body attacking you. So you got to be ready. So you don't want to sleep when there's a predator, right? So when your body's in that stress mode, it's going to naturally stop anandamide production by breaking it down. CBD stops the process of the anandamide breaking down, so allows more to be around. So it creates this effect in your stress system of, oh, okay, I don't need to be that stressed. It's okay. I'm not running from a bear. I can sleep. And that's the reason why it works. And there's a lot of science behind it. And that's why it is specifically sleep promoting. It's not going to make you sleepy during the day. It'll make you calm during the day. But if anxiety is keeping you up at night, it will help that.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So it's really a brilliant molecule, and it has some. I have another slide that shows all the different effects it has on pain, on serotonin, on mitochondrial function. It's what they call a pleiotropic molecule, meaning it hits all these different places in your body in a subtle but very effective way. And it does seem to have pretty much no toxicity. I mean, it's really wonderful. In fact, you know, getting back to the marijuana piece, the first studies on CBD were on people who were taking too much marijuana and too much THC, and they were trying to wean people off the marijuana. So they used CBD because CBD is sort of like the yin to THC's yang, you know, so it kind of helped create balance so people can actually get off of it. So it's a really good molecule. I mean, there's a lot of reason why it has all that hype.
Awesome. And just a few Q&As, I think. Some frequently asked questions in our group particularly revolve around, you know, if someone's on medication, we don't advise people to just all of a sudden stop it, or that it's the worst enemy in the world. Can you just speak to that for a bit? Because I think a lot of people just don't quite understand that, or they think it's completely harming them and it's evil, or people that are on it are afraid to come off it. Do you have any suggestions for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my first strong recommendation is if you're taking a medication, do not just stop taking a medication. That is just never safe. And then if you're taking a medication, you know, if you were in a really tough place and the medication is helping, then, you know, see that as a blessing and use that to help you work on the things we talked about today. Because if you work on those things, you will get better. And if you, and as you get better, then you'll need the medication less and less. And if you work with a qualified practitioner who's well-versed in using natural therapies and understands how medications work, then he or she can really help you get off safely when it's time. You know, what I generally recommend, most of the patients who I see come in on medication. And the first thing I'll tell them is stay on the medication. Don't make any changes. Let's work on things. Let's learn about your body. Let's find out what's out of balance. Let's fix that. And then we'll get to the place where you will be strong enough to slowly wean. And then when it's ready for that, when the body's ready to wean off the medication, then there are herbs and there are amino acids and supplements, like I talk about them in these books here, that will help do that. And the mistake that a lot of, I think, conventional practitioners make is that a patient wants to get off and they say, okay, well, let's go, you know, let's do this. You do a half for a week and then you do another half for another week. And then the third week you can stop taking it, you know, as an example. And usually that's too fast, right? And if you haven't fixed anything and you haven't fixed the reasons why the person went on it to begin with, then it's not going to change, right? It's just going to go right back. If their digestion isn't better, if they're still not sleeping, you know, if they have way so much stress in their life, then, you know, then of course, why would they feel better once they get off the medication? So medications are fine, you know, but I think we get into trouble because we use them, we feel better, and then we just keep using them and there's no plan, you know, to really fix the issue. And then that's what happens is whatever the medication is, it eventually stops working. And then you feel really crummy, and then you still need to figure out what the problem is. So that's, you know, so that's what it is about medication. It's they can help in very urgent circumstances, but they should not be long-term plans.
Well said.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time this week. I think it's been an excellent presentation, and someone that we've mentioned before, I think all of us, yourself included, we've all struggled with mental health, and I think we will all struggle with it at least one point in our life. Yeah. If you're watching this and you're not struggling with this, you at least know a family or a friend that is struggling with this. So it impacts all of us, and we've hoped it's like that you've gotten something out of this and you've got some practical tips as to how you can take control of your mental health and move forward with it. And I think that's one of the most positive things I think we want people to come away from this call is that you're not a victim sometimes it can feel like it attacks you, you've got zero control over it, and it's not going to get better. And I think one of the biggest things that we'd like to offer is hope that it can get better, that we can work on those fundamentals and we can move on with our lives.
You know, one thing I learned is in my own life is that it actually became a strength. You know, what I thought was my biggest weakness became my greatest strength. It's so when you use anxiety to teach you something, you really come out so much stronger and happier.
Well, thank Fantastic. You so much for sharing.
So make today. Sure if you, yeah, make sure we will put his contact details and books, which definitely give him a follow on social media. Get these books.
Please.
So there's Put Anxiety Behind You, How Come They're Happy, and I'm Not, and Holistic Solutions for Anxiety and Depression. So we love Dr. Bongiorno. We are obsessed with him. We're like, ever since we interviewed him, we're like, hey, do you want to do this? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do this? Because we love everything he has to share. I'm sure his books are just as wonderful. So jump in on those. Dr. Bongiorno is still taking telepatients as well. So if you want that one-on-one, definitely reach out.
If anyone's interested, on my website, www.innersourcehealth.com, I do have an article. Right now it's about 12 pages. It's completely free. And it is about using immunosupportive natural therapies for coronavirus to help support your body, to help keep it healthy. So please feel free to download that. And if you're interested, feel free to send us your email. We'll be happy to put you on a newsletter because I am updating that as we go along.
Thank you again, Dr. Bongiorno. We are so thankful for your time, and I'm sure all our viewers are as well.